Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Wednesday, May 1st. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, Waffle House workers try to form a union. Democratic candidates face off in the race for Chatham County District Attorney, and Georgia is one big step closer to getting its first national park. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. Labor organizing is on the rise again in the South, including in Georgia. Some of the latest workers trying to unionize? The folks at the Waffle House. GPB's Amanda Andrews reports.
The inside of a Waffle House is filled with sounds, from the chef working the grill to the host calling out orders and cleaning plates. But recently, workers have been making noise outside the Waffle House. In March, longtime Conyers Waffle House employees Cindy Smith and Katie Giddy led a group of about 50 protesters and union members in chants right outside the building where they usually work.
We deserve 25 an hour. We deserve 24/7 security. We deserve an end to unfair paycheck deduction. And we deserve respect from management.
The protest was part of a week-long strike supported by the Union of Southern Service Workers.
If nobody ever stands up, nothing will change. But if we all band together, they have no option. They can't screw us all over.
Federal minimum wage is $7.35 an hour. But restaurant workers, like the people at Waffle House, are paid a tipped wage. They can make as little as $2.13 an hour plus tips. Cindy Smith says her pay hasn't changed in years.
No, the wages have been the same since I started, $2.92 an hour, not including tips, since I started in 1995.
Then there's the meal deduction. Waffle House takes at least $3 from workers' checks to pay for an on-shift meal, whether they eat it or not. Smith, a mom, says even with tips, she only makes $16,000 a year.
I go to bed hungry most nights. I've lost 192 pounds, not because I want to, but because I haven't been able to eat. I can't afford groceries. I can't afford rent. If it wasn't for my son's dad, I wouldn't have nowhere to live.
Hannah Goldberg is a sociology doctoral student at the City University of New York. She says some workers are very happy adding around 20% of their table's tabs to their take-home pay.
Workers' attachment to this system and commitment to tip earning is exponentially higher in the fine dining sector, where menu prices are higher.
And tips are higher, too. But a 20% tip on the Waffle House All-Star Special is just $2.30. Goldberg says the instability of the restaurant industry in general is another reason wages are low.
Employers definitely push this narrative that, oh, well, if wages go up, we might just go out of business. Or if wages go up, we're going to have to lay off half of you or more.
Being fired for almost any reason, even union organizing, is a very real concern in Georgia, which is one of 28 states with so-called right-to-work laws. Atlanta, North Georgia Labor Council President Sandra L. Williams says many people don't understand the term.
And we've had some people that were unknowingly said, oh, we're definitely for right to work.
But she says employers know for them.
It just means you have the right to terminate without cause.
Which can leave employees who really want a union very scared to speak up.
What they have seen in the past is that if you start that union talk, if you will, we're going to get rid of you because you are a troublemaker.
Waffle House labor organizers like Katie Giddy say they are not deterred.
We will not be intimidated by scare tactics, and we will keep coming together.
Meanwhile, workers filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Labor about that $3 per shift meal deduction. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews in Conyers.
The two Democratic candidates for Chatham County District Attorney, including the incumbent, faced off in a voters' forum this week in Savannah ahead of the May 21st primary. Early voting is underway now, and voters are weighing in on how justice is served in their county. GPB's Benjamin Payne reports.
In making her case for a second term, Chatham County DA Shalina Cook-Jones pointed to what she called her efficient system of justice.
We have tried more murders, serious violent felonies, and DUIs in the 3.5 years that I've been there than they did before COVID. True leaders know how to do more with less.
less personnel, that is. Since Cook Jones took office, about 40 prosecutors have left. Challenger Jenny Parker was one of them.
I have about 12 experienced prosecutors willing to come back with me as part of a team. Our district attorney's office needs that team right now.
Parker says a goal of hers is to reopen the Special Victims Unit, which shut down during her opponent's tenure. Cook Jones says her office has been hamstrung by sparse budgeting set by the Chatham County Commission. For GPB News, I'm Benjamin Payne in Savannah.
Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene says she'll call for a vote next week on ousting House Speaker Mike Johnson. The Rome Republican is forcing members of her party to take sides after Democrats, including Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, said they'd provide the votes to save Johnson as Speaker. Speaking outside the Capitol today, Greene railed against congressional leaders.
Hakeem Jeffries is endorsing Mike Johnson because he knows Mike Johnson's leadership is going to hand the House majority to the Democrats in January.
Johnson called Greene's attempt to oust him, quote, wrong for the country.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Governor Brian Kemp signed a package of agriculture bills into law yesterday. One of them prohibits any, quote, agent of China and other countries labeled as foreign adversaries from buying Georgia farmland or land within 10 miles of a military installation. Democrats in the state legislature said the bill is discriminatory, but Governor Kemp touted it as a national security measure. Kemp also signed into law a bill that establishes licensing requirements for growing hemp. Atlanta law enforcement officers are working together to assemble kits that will help children deal with potentially traumatic situations. Officers from the Atlanta Police Department and the Fulton County Sheriff's Office are both participating in the First Responder Kits for Kids program. The kits, compiled by volunteers, include a variety of toys and activities to distract and relieve children during stressful situations. Major April Moore works for the Fulton County Sheriff's Office. She says it's important to her that children are taken care of.
These kits are providing an opportunity for the kids to not be paying attention to the turmoil or the chaos that may be going on, and they can be distracted just enough for us to ensure that they are safe while our other partners are able to take care of the issue at hand.
Officers from both departments will carry these kits as a tool for emergency calls when children are present. Georgia is one big step closer to getting its first national park. Today, a bipartisan group of Georgia lawmakers introduced a bill into the U.S. House and Senate that would make the Ocmulgee Mounds National Historic Park in Macon the Ocmulgee Mounds National Park and Preserve. It would be Georgia's first national park, but it would also be an enormous milestone for the Muscogee Creek Nation of Oklahoma. GPB's Grant Blankenship sat down today with Tracy Rivas, who has been an official advocate for the park, to learn more.
You are former chief of staff to Muscogee Creek Nation Principal Chief David Hill. You're a Muscogee citizen. Meanwhile, you've lived here in Macon for a few years as a part of the effort to create the national park. In the time you've lived here, what have you come to learn about what Georgians know about their connection to the Muscogee Creek Nation?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, like, this was not something that I ever saw myself doing, was moving back to the homelands to be a part of these efforts. But it's been an incredible time. Coming in was a hard adjustment, realizing that there are zero federally recognized tribes in the state of Georgia, and that really people here don't know who we are authentically. They don't know what happened accurately about when we were here and how we were removed, but even more so, they don't know what happened to us when we left, what happened at the end of removal and the Trail of Tears when we made it into Oklahoma. So it's really been an opportunity to educate this community, to showcase who we are today as a sovereign nation, and to show those stories of survival.
What do you know about what people know about the connection of the Ocmulgee Mounds to Oklahoma?
You know, interestingly enough, our capital city in Oklahoma, where our tribal headquarters sits, is Ocmulgee, Oklahoma. And most people in Middle Georgia were very unaware that the Ocmulgee River, the Ocmulgee Mounds, the park, this was a capital city. And so most people are unaware why we named our capital city in Oklahoma Ocmulgee. And so that's been one of the things that's been really interesting. But I think it's also knowing how we use the land, what the mound sites actually were for, how long we were in this region, all the words, how to say the names, the entire state of Georgia. I say this often, you cannot throw a rock in the state of Georgia and not hit cultural land. And it's our words and those same words translated into Oklahoma. So you will find the same words in Oklahoma that you find here in Georgia and Alabama and Florida.
Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, that history stretches back into what mainstream historians call prehistory. I mean, we know this about the tribal history of Georgia, right?
We know that we were here. What's difficult is that because the mounds and the park itself were built around the archaeological dig from 1936, the history has been told from an archaeological standpoint, as if we are the dinosaurs of the days that came from this land. And there's not context of who we were culturally and how long we were here before. If you say that Columbus landed in 1492 and Indian removal is 1830, there's roughly about 400 years in there of history that is not taught in school.
So the Umogi Mounds, they've already been in the national park system for years. When this bill passes, what's going to be different?
The national park is going to be different from where we've been, in that the nation will actually have, the tribal nation, the Muscogee Creek Nation, will serve as a full co-manager. Currently, there are four other parks in the National Park Service that have codified co-management provisions. What that means is, in law, they are required to have a management section, whether that is hunting and fishing rights that were treaty-based, whether that is adjacent to their tribal land, to their reservation base, or that they have hunter-gatherer, or that they are the only ones who can tell the cultural stories in those lands. Of the 460 plus national parks in their system, there are only four that have those provisions. What we are doing with the Umogi Mounds is that the nation, as it gets redesignated, will be sitting at the table to create the management plan for this new expanded national park and preserve. That we will not only do the cultural piece, but we will do the land management, the species management. We will talk about direct hiring to allow our citizens to actually work to be the storytellers of this land. We are going to look at the arts and crafts that are sold at the park to make sure that they are authentic Creek citizens and that we aren't having replica pieces being sold as if they're ours. So it's really going to put a nation, a tribe, in a position to truly be partners with the National Park Service to not only co-steward these lands, but to co-manage these lands.
We already touched on a little bit of this, but I mean, what aspects of the cultural and historical story do you imagine are going to be re-emphasized or newly emphasized as that management plan shapes up?
So the park does a great job of talking about the archaeological dig, that there were people here, and we know that we have carbon dating, and they do that already. But where we really need to expand is the people. If somebody was to find your relics laying in the ground today, would they know who you were? They wouldn't. And so it's looking at the authentic piece of how did we actually form these mound sites, and what did that mean when we came to council here, when we had tribal towns up and down the river. And so when you look at this history, it gives you a context of how big these civilizations really truly were. And we travel all over the globe to look at ancient civilizations, right? We have that here in our backyard, in these lands, and allowing the cultural piece to come in and tell these stories helps fill in those blanks.
So sort of tucked in at the bottom of the bill is this provision to establish what the bill calls Indian Country on 126 acres of land, like in the park footprint, already owned by the Muscogee Creek Nation. Give me just a taste of the importance of that should it happen. I mean, what the future implications for the nation?
Well, this is absolutely one of my favorite provisions in the bill, and this is such a huge win for Indian Country. So the nation had to buy their own land back here in the homelands. And so it is 126 acres. It is culturally significant to us. It is within the Umogi Corridor. We know that up and down the Okmulgee River, while the park itself only has 8 mound sites in it, we know that there are additional mound sites up and down the river. So purchasing this land was important for us because we need to protect these cultural sites. We are not looking to dig them up. We want to keep everything preserved, protected in the land where it is. I don't know that this is true for the entire state, but I can say this Middle Georgia region, this community that I've worked with for the last 2.5 years, they're sincere in their efforts to want to welcome the nation back, but not for us to be paraded down Main Street, for us to come and say, this is who we are, this is what we're asking of you, and let us do it our way. But as we work forward and work alongside our partners, we survived this forced removal, and this is truly an opportunity for us to reconcile this history, to come back into our lands. It's humbling, it's emotional. It is not something that can be wrapped up in a bow, and I am beyond honored to be able to serve in this role, to serve my family, to serve my community, and to really work alongside this community as we move forward to create Georgia's first national park and the next national park in the country.
Yeah. Tracy Rivas, thank you again for talking to me today.
Mado.
That was GPB's Grant Blankenship talking with Tracy Rivas of the Muscogee Creek Nation about the new bill which would create Georgia's first ever national park at the Okmulgee Mounds in Macon. A small group of rideshare drivers gathered near the state capitol in Atlanta today to join a nationwide day of action. The Atlanta drivers were part of work stoppages to highlight what they say is the need for job regulations, fair pay, and an end to unfair app deactivations. John Teckel has been driving for Uber for a decade. He says he tells customers drivers aren't seeing any money from the rising costs of using the app.
I tell them, you know, please call Uber, call Lyft, okay? They're not paying us. You're paying so much, but we're getting about 20% or 10% out of what you're paying, and they're taking everything.
Justice for App Workers Coalition is the main group organizing rideshare drivers in Atlanta. The group represents more than 130,000 drivers across the country. Atlanta Braves fans right now are unable to watch their favorite team on Comcast because of a dispute between the cable company and Diamond Sports Group. Several MLB teams are caught up in the dispute. In a statement on social media, Bally Sports, which broadcasts Braves games and is owned by Diamond Sports Group, says Comcast rejected a proposed extension that would have kept Bally on the air. Comcast says it has been flexible with Diamond Sports Group, which is in bankruptcy proceedings, but have not been able to reach an agreement, and therefore Comcast doesn't have the rights to the programming. Comcast says it will proactively credit customers' associated costs, that's about $8 to $10 a month. Braves fans using other cable providers or streaming services are not impacted. Governor Brian Kemp has signed into law a bill that makes it easier to prosecute people after fentanyl overdose deaths. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more.
Also called Austin's Law, after a 30-year-old man who died from taking a counterfeit pill, the law creates a new felony offense of aggravated involuntary manslaughter that could result in a life sentence. Manufacturers or sellers of a drug do not have to know what was in it in order to be charged. Maisie Lynn Gerton with the Georgia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers worries the new law could counter public health efforts to curb the opioid epidemic.
Part of what we see happen within the community of people using drugs that they sometimes sell them to each other. So if that's who ends up getting prosecuted, I don't know that that's serving our community.
The law does not affect Georgia's medical amnesty law, which protects 911 callers in the case of overdoses. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
In sports, Luis Castillo threw 7 shutout innings and the Mariners' bullpen held on for a 3-2 victory last night over the Atlanta Braves. Castillo retired the final 11 hitters he faced and allowed just 3 hits against the second-best offense in baseball. The Braves have now lost consecutive games for the first time this season, the last team in the majors to do so. And quarterback Stetson Bennett has rejoined the Los Angeles Rams for the start of their offseason program after missing his entire rookie season for undisclosed reasons. The former Georgia Bulldog is attending team meetings and lifting weights with his teammates at the Rams training complex. He had been placed on the reserve non-football illness list 5 days before the Los Angeles regular season opener last year, a move not related to his shoulder injury. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. We highly recommend you do it now. It'll keep us current in your podcast feed. And if you've got feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Email us. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.